Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Dr. Paul Kinnett is the co-author of the book, The Case Against Fluoride, How Hazardous Waste is Ending Up in Our Drinking Water and the Bad Science and Powerful Politics that are Keeping It There. Let's talk about what is fluoride that's ending up in the water. You're saying this is a hazardous waste. Where is it coming from?
Well, most of the fluoride that's added to the public drinking water is coming from the phosphate fertilizer industry. And the history of that is quite interesting. For about 100 years, around the phosphate fertilizer industry, you would have cattle being crippled, vegetation being destroyed, and eventually they were forced to put a wet scrubbers on, a spray of water, to capture the toxic gases that were causing this problem. Those two gases were hydrogen fluoride and silicon tetrafluoride. And these result when you treat the phosphate rock, which is practically insoluble in water, and you treat it with sulfuric acid to make it soluble, to use it as a phosphate fertilizer to feed plants and so on. But as I said, these gases were damaging the environment. But if you put them through a spray of water, a wet scrubber, the water converts these gases into a substance called hexafluorosilicic acid, which actually doesn't occur naturally. It's a man-made product. But it's also contaminated with other heavy metals, and arsenic, and actually also some trace amounts of radioactive isotopes, because the same rock that's mined for phosphate, certainly in Florida, is also mined for uranium. Anyway, this stuff, you can't dump it into the sea by international law, and they can't dump it locally because it's too concentrated. But one of the vagaries of a U.S. law is that if a chemical industry produces a hazardous waste product and someone buys it from them, it's no longer classified as hazardous waste, it's classified as a product. And that, of course, is the motivation for that one, I think, was good. They wanted to try to get the chemical industry to maximize the reuse of nasty chemicals rather than having to put them into landfills or whatever, to send them to hazardous waste facilities. But when you see this being used and put straight into the drinking water, the public utilities, by buying this stuff, make it into a product, and then they can put it into the drinking water, it's absolutely bizarre. I mean, this novel was written by Kafka, or maybe even George Orwell, but it's absolutely crazy in my mind.
We should
do that.
Are we talking about pure fluoride in this case? Is it pure? No.
I just a bit of a chemical thing here. You can never get pure fluoride. You're always going to have fluoride with a partner, a compound. If you're talking about the element, you're talking about fluorine. That does not occur naturally. It's a very, very reactive substance. So it's always combined with other elements. A simple example, sodium fluoride. Mm. That would be a combination of sodium and fluoride. Calcium fluoride, a combination of calcium and fluoride. Now, if the compound is soluble in water, then the ions go their separate way. So calcium, if you put sodium fluoride into water, you'd have sodium ions and fluoride ions going their separate ways. And to all intents and purposes, in solution, you've essentially got two different chemicals. You've got the sodium ions, they will have properties. You have fluoride ions, they will have properties. So we can quite confidently talk about the fluoride ions' properties without considering for the moment what other ion is floating out there, because they're separate in solution. If you boil the stuff down and evaporate the water, then it will go back to a solid form, and you'd have a crystalline structure with metal ions and negative ions back in the crystal structure. But that's why in Canada, you're luckier than we are in the United States, because in Canada, if you get a bottle of water, they are required to put the concentrations of the minerals in that water and some other things like pH and so on. But you'll notice that the ions are listed separately. If you're listening and you've got a bottle of water in your house, go and get it in Canada. And you'll see things like carbonate, sulfate, sodium ions, potassium ions, nitrate ions, maybe fluoride, chloride, whatever. Those ions are listed separately. You don't have listings of, say, magnesium carbonate or calcium chloride or whatever, because once those things are in solution, they've forgotten which compound they came from. And so what you're looking at, if you're looking at well spring water, you're looking at what's happened when the water has percolated through the rocks and has gathered up different ions from different compounds. So that's why the ions are listed separately, and that's why, from a chemical perspective, we can treat the fluoride ion as a separate entity, as long as it's in solution. And, of course, from my perspective, 18 years ago, I was under the impression, because of this prevailing attitude that the people opposed to fluoridation are Looney Tunes, Dr. Strangelove, and so on, I thought those crazy anti-fluoridation people had confused fluorine with fluoride. Fluorine, the most active, reactive element in the periodic table, with, say, sodium fluoride, that's like confusing chlorine gas, which is toxic, nasty stuff, and sodium chloride, common salt, which we sprinkle on our potatoes. So when elements combine, the properties change. The properties of compounds are quite different from their parent elements. Now, so that was all understood by me. And what I was shocked to find is that whilst fluoride ions are unreactive from a chemical point of view, they are very active from a biological point of view. And that was a shocker. Very active. A fluoride could interfere with hydrogen bonds, which keeps biology together. The structure and function of macromolecules in biology are held together by hydrogen bonds. The making of and breaking of hydrogen bonds is essential to many enzymatic reactions in the body. So fluoride can interfere with enzymes. Fluoride can interfere with all kinds of things in the body, including, we now know, switching on G proteins, which is part of the messaging system across membranes. I won't go into detail with that. Now,
Dr. Kinnett, you know, when I talk to pro-fluoridation, you know, people that are pro-fluoridation, they say that, you know, when we stop fluoride, or actually when we put fluoridation in the water, when we put this hydrofluoric acid in the water, they're saying that every dollar spent on fluoridation saves money in the terms of dental work for children. Is that true?
The figures that they come up with, I think the latest numbers that they use is for every dollar spent, $38 is saved. But that is a terrible, if you look at the calculations, it's a very flimsy piece of work. They completely ignore how much it costs to treat dental fluorosis. They're highly optimistic in how much tooth decay they are claiming it actually reduces, if any. The evidence that actually swallowing fluoride reduces tooth decay is very, very small. And, of course, they completely deny any effect other than dental fluorosis. But if any of the other effects that we're concerned about, like accumulation in the bones, the first symptoms of which is just like arthritis, we have enormous amount of money spent on people for painkillers. If you consider lowered thyroid function, one of the most prescribed medications in Canada is Synthroid to treat people with hypothyroidism. And, of course, we have the economic ramifications of lowering IQ are enormous. So all of these things are ignored because the mantra is that fluoridation is safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. The only problem is dental fluorosis, and that's not a problem because it's only cosmetic effect, blah, 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 blah. So basically you're listening to propagandists, people that are not prepared to admit that they've made a huge mistake with this practice, which includes, incidentally, Health Canada. Very doctrinaire on this issue, and I'm afraid in Canada you've got this chain of command from Health Canada all the way down to the local level of medical officers of health who have their marching orders to support fluoridation. And if you're in a bureaucracy, policy, you don't challenge policy if you are to survive, if you're going to keep your job. And medical officers of health are paid an enormous amount of money, somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 a year. And by and large, they probably give good advice to local councils. But on this case, the advice is lousy, it's doctrinaire, it's not scientific, it's political. And I'm afraid that's very, very sad, because it's when more and more people find out about this, people are going to lose trust in these medical officers of health. And then when they want to be trusted on something very, very serious that they want the council to do or the local authority to do, they're not going to be trusted. People are not going to follow their advice.
You
should not throw away the public's trust lightly, and that is being done for this foolish practice of fluoridation.
Dr. Kinnett, one of the things that dentists say is that when fluoride is stopped, that tooth decay rates go up. What's your experience with that?
The science on that is very poor. In fact, there was a study done in British Columbia, in fact, by, I don't know how to pronounce his name, I think it's Malpome, that found the opposite. When they looked at tooth decay after they'd stopped fluoridation in the community in British Columbia, it did not go up. It continued to go down. Now, you've always got the problem. There's about four other studies from East Germany, Finland, and Cuba. Similar results. The researchers expected the tooth decay to go up, but it didn't. Now, it's possible, as some promoters claim, that because the community stopped fluoridation, that either individuals or communities took other steps to fight tooth decay. So we have to be a little bit careful with that. But certainly you don't have an obvious dramatic increase in tooth decay when you stop. And that applies, incidentally, almost throughout Europe. You know that most countries in Europe do not fluoridate their drinking water. 97% of the population of Europe does not drink fluoridated water. And yet, according to the World Health Organization data, which is available online for 12-year-olds, there is no difference in the rate of decline of tooth decay in these countries between those kids who've grown up in a fluoridated country and those who've grown up in a non-fluoridated country.
Sorry, can you repeat that? Because what you're saying is that we're wasting a lot of tax money because we're dumping something in the water that's not working on under studies showing that children's teeth are not being affected.
Yeah, absolutely. We're wasting a lot of taxpayers' money. In fact, if we did it properly, if we used pharmaceutical-grade sodium fluoride to fluoridate the water supply instead of using a hazardous waste, then it would be an astronomical waste of money. But we are doing this on the cheap because we are taking hazardous waste in the phosphate fertilizer industry, paying them some money, not too much money. If the truth be known, the phosphate fertilizer industry is desperate to get rid of that waste instead of sending it to hazardous waste facilities, which would cost them an arm and a leg. They'd probably give it to us if the truth be known. But, we're wasting a tremendous amount of money. And, in fact, just recently I've seen figures from a program in Scotland called Child Smile. They don't fluoridate the water in Scotland because of a court case there. But for the last 5-10 years, they've had this program where the emphasis has been on education, not fluoridation, to fight tooth decay. And that education begins with the youngest children. So when they go to nursery school, they call them nursery schools there, I think you call them kindergartens here. The kids about three years old. They teach them how to brush their teeth. They also give them healthy snacks, and they're also working with the parents. The same idea with the dental hygiene and the better diet for those children. More vegetables, more fruit and vegetables, less sugar, and, brush your teeth. And this program has been a remarkable success over the last 5 years ago or so. The number of children 10 to 12 without tooth decay has gone from about 43% to 73%. Their goal was, I think, 70% by 2015. So they're ahead of schedule, and it's saving a lot of money. And, of course, you know that tooth decay is concentrated largely in low-income families. And they've got a lot of low-income families in places like Glasgow. And it was the Glasgow researchers who said, hey, we've saved about £6 million doing this. So that's the message, Dave. education, not fluoridation. And there's also a payoff for this education, because if you educate the kids to consume less sugar, not only does that fight tooth decay, but it fights obesity. Mm-hmm. And so if Canadians are wondering where the money's going to come from, this is the investment. This is the investment. If you can reduce obesity amongst children, you're going to save the country billions of dollars in taxes and health care in the future. So that's where the sensible money is. It's not just not using this nasty chemical to put in the water, but you will fight obesity by this educational approach.
Well, Dr. Kinnett, except for a couple of provinces, Quebec and BC, which have only 3% of the population fluoridated, Canada has one of the highest levels of fluoridation in the world in terms of population. Are our teeth any better?
Can I interrupt you just a second? That actually is not true, David. It's dropped by 25% in the last few years, and I think the figure now is around about 40%, which is much lower than the United States at 70-odd percent. Ireland has 73%. Australia, I think, has over 80%. So a handful of countries, largely English-speaking, have higher percentage of the population drinking fluoridated water. But it's coming down. Many communities in Ontario have stopped fluoridating in the last few years. Calgary, that's a big chunk of Alberta, stopped fluoridating. 1.3 million people. In fact, it was one of my co-authors, James Beck, MD, PhD, who used this book to help our book, The Case Against Fluoride, to stop fluoridation in Calgary. So we've got some great successes over the last few years, and most of them have been in Canada.
Is there a trend of taking fluoride out of the water in Canada?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yes. I mean, the trend is certainly very few communities have started fluoridation in Canada over the last dozen years or so. The trend has been to stop. I mean, we've seen it stopped in Quebec City. We've seen it stopped, I mentioned, in Calgary. In Ontario, we've seen it stopped in Waterloo, in Dryden, in Windsor. And many, many other communities are moving to stop it right now. We have a court case starting in Waterloo. Peel, the Peel region. One of the top law firms in Canada has been hired to show that it's illegal. That basically a Supreme Court ruling in the 1950s, which people have hitherto thought was overruled by the Fluoridation Act. This lawyer, one of the top law firms in the country, argues that that is not the case. The Fluoridation Act does not have the power to overrule the Supreme Court's ruling, that this is a violation of human rights to force people to take medication, which is what you're doing. Hmm. And don't say that people are not forced to take it because they can get bottled water. That certainly doesn't apply to people from low income. So you've only got to gather a few people of low income to demonstrate that they're being forced to consume this medication against their will, forced to bottle feed their babies with it. You can see that this... I am very, very, very optimistic that within 2 years there won't be any fluoridation left in Canada. We don't have the same protection as you do on this. We don't have this provision, this ruling that your Supreme Court had. Unfortunately, here, we're allowed to do this under police power. You know, you give authority in the United States, you give communities police power to do, to protect the health of the public or whatever the rubric that they use, even though this is preposterous because tooth decay is hardly a contagious disease on a social level, on a community level, and it's not life-threatening. So why any local jurisdictions use police power to force it not only on children but on adults?
Dr. Kinnett,
adults that can work out that if they want fluoridation, the sensible thing to do would be to brush it on your teeth. But again, I haven't used fluoridated toothpaste for 18 years, so I'm not advising that. I'm just saying if you want it, it makes much more sense to brush it on your teeth and spit it out. Unfortunately, a lot of kids don't have the good control of their swallowing reflex, younger kids. So So that's problematic there.
Dr. Kinnett, we're right out of time. I'm just wondering if you can just summarize what the case against fluoride is and maybe tell people where they can get the book.
Yeah, it's a bad medical practice. We should never use the water supply to deliver medicine. We've never done it with anything else. It's a bad medical practice. You can't control the dose. You can't control who gets it. It violates the individual's right to informed consent. Many, many kids now are being overexposed to fluoride based upon dental fluorosis rates. What we're concerned about is what it's also doing to their bones, their thyroid function, and lowering of IQ. Our webpage is the fluoridealert.org. Don't forget to spell fluoride, F-L-U-O, not O-U, like flu, fluoridealert.org. It has a massive health database there. This is a science-based webpage with lots of videotapes and arguments and so on. Fluoridealert.org. The book is called The Case Against Fluoride by Connett et al., and you can get it from Amazon.com.
Dr. Kinnett, thanks for coming on the show. It's been great having you.
Thanks, David. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about mason jar salads with Julia Mirabella.